There's a lot of people who they just talk about grinding all the time, grinding all the time, grinding all the time. Why? Because they think the only way to have enough is to grind your way to enough. And that's the exact opposite of the biblical narrative. I think the push is powered by the pull. Right? Think about Paul. He says, I run the race with endurance. He gives this impression that this is hard. And then he says, but I do it with joy. When you lose sight of the vision, you lose sight of the motivation. You lose sight of the pull side of the equation. Right? If you're crystal clear on what you want, then that vision and that desire is actually powerful enough to power the push that's going to be required to get there. Let's say somebody goes, you know, I really think I would benefit. I really think I can move right in my career by just getting up a couple hours earlier. But I really love to sleep. How do I find the discipline to get up a couple hours earlier? I think that that's the wrong question in many ways. I think the question is, how do I become the kind of person who just wakes up earlier? And to me, part of the answer to that question is, well, for what motivation? So today, Jake and I are going to have a conversation about, does discipline help us get to the right side of the bell curve? There's a lot of conversation around discipline, how to be disciplined, whether you should be disciplined. And ultimately, every conversation that we want to have is really rooted in, how do we help people move to the right on the bell curve? And so today, we're going to explore this idea of discipline and whether or not it's a factor. And if it is a factor, how important of a factor is it in us moving to the right side? So you'll probably notice if you're watching this on video that Jake and I are in the same room today. So we're here in Florida, finally getting my office put together. And so we just did kind of a makeshift video studio here for us to do this in-person interview. And we're excited to do it. So with that, Jake, let's dive in.
Yeah. Thanks, Zach. And thanks for having us here. I think when I think of discipline for me personally, and I know for a lot of people my age, it's been a huge thing where there's so much push motivation out there. Like I'm sure guys my age, they'll go on YouTube or any sort of social media and they'll see like a David Goggins out there or something like that, that are just like, you look at them and you're like, man, I wish that level of discipline I could have in my life, because I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, discipline is one of those things that really pushes you to the right side of the bell curve. Like you see a lot of these people that are super disciplined and they're able to complete things that a lot of other people that I would say are not as disciplined wouldn't be able to do. So it's like, really for me, I see a lot of time when I have my discipline in my life, I'll go and watch a David Goggins video, like I was saying, and get like this fleeting feeling of discipline. And then two or three days later, I wake up in reality. I'm like, okay, I don't know if that sort of discipline, the, you know, the Navy SEAL level of discipline is working for me. And I don't know. I guess for me, it's just like, I at the end of that, I feel like a guilt, 'cause I'm like, okay, now I'm not disciplined. Like I'll use an example for working out. I've always wanted to be just like super consistent with working out. And, you know, I'll be super consistent for like a week and I'll get all into it and I'll be eating all the right stuff and I'll be, you know, working out and doing all the right things and getting involved, taking notes when I'm working out. And then a week later, I'm like, you know, sitting on the couch eating bonbons. And, it's like, I just don't know what that is that to make that lasting discipline, you know?
Sure. So I think this is how I think about it. And whether, like, I want to say this for the people who are watching or listening, I'm not trying to say that I have all the answers of how to move people to the right side of the bell curve as we talk about it. A lot of our conversations are just me saying, hey, based on my life, based on my experience, these are the things that have worked for me. These are the things that I think are questionable. And ultimately, people got to try things for themselves. And so with that being said, the way that I think about discipline is, one of the fruits of the Spirit is self-control. And to me, self-control and discipline seem to be synonymous, right? So I do think there's a value in discipline. I do think there's a value in self-control. I also, in the context of the broader picture, I also think it's a fruit of the Spirit. I think it's in many ways something that God imparts in us in order to elicit that very self-control. Now, somebody listening to this might go, yeah, well, there's a lot of people who wouldn't call themselves Christians who have massive discipline. And I would say, yeah, that's true. And so then what is it that differentiates like discipline in the pure sense that those people might have versus like self-control, as I think about it, as it relates to a fruit of the Spirit and the conversation that we're having? And I don't know that I necessarily have the answer, but here's what I would say. I think about discipline as words matter, right? Words really matter. And so I think we have to get on the same page as to what do we mean by discipline? Because I think when a lot of people talk about discipline, what they're really talking about is like this white knuckling, grinding it out. Okay. And is there a time and a place for doing that? Probably. But I think what's more powerful than discipline is habits. Because what we're talking about in the example of working out is, okay, you can have the discipline to white knuckle and force yourself to get up and go work out and be consistent, and you probably won't do it forever because it's not enjoyable to you. It's not beneficial. It is beneficial, but like in your mind's eye, it's not habitual. It's not just something you do. It's not someone you become. It's not something that you mature into. And so for me, I think, okay, well, what is it that, if we're going to talk about, instead of talking about how do I get the discipline to work out, we say, how do I make working out just who I am? How do I make, because to me, like all this stuff comes down to how do I see myself? Do I see myself? Is my identity rooted in somebody who's just, he works out? Because then it's easy for it to become a habit instead of feeling like you have to find the discipline to do it. Now, when I think about that, I go, okay, well, whether it's working out or maybe it's waking up early, right? Like, let's say somebody goes, you know, I really think I would benefit. I really think I can move right in my career by just getting up a couple hours earlier. But I really love to sleep. How do I find the discipline to get up a couple hours earlier? I think that that's the wrong question in many ways. I think the question is, how do I become the kind of person who just wakes up earlier? And to me, part of the answer to that question is, well, for what motivation, right? Because if you think about, like, if you're chasing after something that you're not sure that you really want, then it's much harder to turn it into a habit. It's much harder to become that person. It's much harder to be, like, what we're talking about, disciplined in that endeavor. But if it's something that you really want, if it's something that like you are super joyed about, super pumped about, it becomes easier. It becomes easier to be disciplined. And so in many ways, I think part of the challenge, and this is again, like you and I talk about this all the time, I think a lot of the times people want to say it's black or it's white. And the reason I think we want to do that is because we want to remove the friction from the equation. And I think that that's the wrong approach. I think all of these conversations, all of these things that we're trying to figure out really do require us, if we're going to be successful in them, to actually learn to walk in the friction. And what I mean by that is, like, yeah, there's a time and a place for discipline and doing things that we don't want to do, right? That we just really don't care to do because we know it's the right thing to do. But there's also a time and a place, and in many cases, at least in my mind, takes up a bigger percentage of this, is like, how do we actually put ourselves in a position to want to do these things, right? And what I mean by all that, the reason I said all that is because there's a lot of people who tell you to invest in getting better at the things you suck at because it's discipline. And I'm like, well, yeah, you could. Or you could invest all, let's say 80% of that time and effort into just getting better at what you're really good at that doesn't require all the discipline, right? Because God gifted you in those ways. And so, yeah, but the other 20% is for things that you actually have to do that you probably don't want to do, right? Because I think that, like, there's a book, Who Not How. Now, you can't find somebody else to work out for you. So there's got to be a percentage of our time and our effort that goes into things that other people just can't do for us, even if we might not necessarily want to do them. And then there's all these other places where you might have things you don't want to do, but you can find a who to do them for you, right? And so I think that's what we're really talking about is like, how do we find the balance in the friction of marrying those two? And to me, I think it's how do you become the kind of person who just self-identifies as someone who just does these things?
Yeah, that's interesting because I almost feel like, you know, going back to what you talked about for creating the habits, it's like when you look at somebody who you would see really disciplined, like from the outside, it's probably more than likely just habitual that they're the kind of person that is like that, probably. I mean, I guess the question for you is if we talk about kind of, we're sort of talking about the idea of push versus pull motivation in the sense of, you know, are you going to push your way through it to become that person? Or like, is the reason that you're doing it is because you're just absolutely filled with the joy of doing it. That's the pull motivation. And, you know, for somebody who is created that habit of doing it, of whatever it might be, let's say it's for working out. It's like now they're the disciplined person because it's become habitual that they go on a 2 mile run every morning, they come back and they lift weights or whatever. But I guess the question that I would have is in order to start that snowball, is that the point in time where you need that sort of push motivation to like, okay, maybe this is something that I don't want to do right now, but I do it enough to where it creates the habitual response of this is the person that I'm becoming. Is that sort of aligned with that?
I think so. I think let's use working out as an example. Let's say you're a guy and let's say you're running at 20% body fat. And let's say you want to get down to 13%. And let's say that equates to basically getting rid of 7 pounds of fat. And maybe you got to pack on 3 pounds of muscle or whatever. And you go, and then let's say you just tell yourself, I'm going to be the guy. Like, I'm going to see myself as a guy who's 13% body fat. And that's going to give you some pull motivation. But then, as we all know, you get into the gym and you work out for a week and you hop on the scale and it doesn't look any different. And you're like, God dang. And that's when most people quit, right? They quit. And this is going back to when we talk about this idea of the investor's approach. It's like, now let's take money. Let's say you're making $75,000 a year. Let's say you got an extra $500 a month left over to invest. And you're like, I'm the kind of person who invests. I spend less than I make and I invest the rest because I'm planning for my future. But then you look at it and you're like, man, I just worked my rear off for a year and all I have to show for it is $6,000 in this investment account. And maybe it grew by, you know, 500, right? And if you can't see clearly where you're trying to go, looking at it that way, right? Looking at the glass half empty in that sense, you will quit. You'll be like, I would much rather just spend $6,000 going on a vacation next year. I would much rather just spend $6,000 going out to dinner with my wife, you know, once every 2 weeks next year. Because there is a place where until the snowball gets rolling, that's in my mind where the push motivation has to exist. Because I see all the time people quit right before they're going to make it. Because they just run out of that juice to make it through that last part before the compounding takes place. So going back to the exercise example, it's like, well, let's say week one, dang it. Week two, down a pound. Week three, down half a pound. Most people will quit by the time week four, week whatever. It's like because they haven't seen. And this is what we posted a video the other day of see it, believe it, go for it. This is where seeing it is so valuable. When you lose sight of the vision, you lose sight of the motivation. You lose sight of the pull side of the equation, right? When you read the Bible, there's many stories, especially in the Old Testament, where like God gave someone a promise, but they didn't actually see that promise come to fruition. For like King David, let's say, he gets anointed king of Israel when they say he was probably about 15. He doesn't actually become the king for 15 more years. Okay, so. So I don't know. I'm not King David. I wasn't there. But as I think through it in my brain, the 15 years in that gap, there was some pretty miserable experiences in there. But he ultimately still became king. Obviously, that's because God is sovereign. But when you think about like his personal psychological experience in that interim, I would have to imagine that, yes, during that time, there had to be some push motivation. Like he had to keep in his mind's eye, God made me a promise. I don't see it yet, but I trust God. I believe God. And so I'm going to push through these hard times because what's pulling me at the same time is the promise that he made. If he loses sight of the thing that God told him was going to be true, he probably stops pursuing the promise, right? And so I think in our daily lives, it's the same thing. Let's say you decide, I'm going to go start a side hustle. in 1 week in, or what we're doing right here with the podcasts, you know, and the videos. It's like you get four or five or six or seven or eight or nine or 10 weeks in, and you're still getting, you know, maybe you get one video that has a couple thousand views and the rest of the videos have 40 views, and you're like, it's not working. And you quit. And the reality is, when you look at the people who have made it, they just keep plowing. They just keep powering through that. Now, on one side, if you're just doing it and you don't really care about it, you're probably going to lose the motivation. You're probably going to lose the pull factor, so you don't then have the push factor. But if you really actually love doing it, if you're excited about doing it, if it's part of who you say you are, who you want to be, that should give you, and you have the vision for it, that should give you the pull motivation that actually fills up the push side of the equation.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm just gonna play the other side of the ball really fast, because I know there's people out there on the internet. Like we made a video a few weeks back about follow your passion, and I know there's people out on the internet that are basically saying, you know, if it's hard, usually that's a sign that it's not the right thing for you. You know, like the trench isn't worth what's after it. Like, you know, and I guess like where do those people miss the ball? Like where are those kind of people that are saying, you know, if you're not enjoying it, if you're not happy, then you probably shouldn't do it.
Well, they've probably never actually done anything worth like that. That's really made it to the level that we're talking about. Like going back to this whole thing started because when I think about, you know, I have been the guy in the past who started the YouTube videos and then stopped multiple times. And I think back to like, why? It's like, well, because the vision behind what I was trying to do wasn't clear. And so there was this bouncing, and then it got to the point where I'm like, and now when I think about what's the underlying theme of everything that I was passionate about talking about before, it's exactly what we talked about. It's like, I have a desire to help people thrive. I'm not necessarily the guy who's the arbiter of what that looks like. I'm exploring in real life, what does it look like to thrive? And then what does that look like visually? Well, I think it looks like a bell curve, right? There's people who are experiencing life on the far left, which is pretty miserable. Most people are somewhere in the middle 80%, which is okay, but not all that it could be. And then there's some people who are on the far right. And they're experiencing life in that equation, let's say, better than everyone else. It's like, well, what does it take? And not just individually, but societally, right? All these ideas about success and what's going to lead to people's thriving, which is equates to like moving the bell curve to the right. And yet we're living through a time where most of what they advocate for is actually moving everyone to the left. And so what I want to have conversations about is, how do we actually move the ball individually, collectively, to the right? Okay, so now the why and the theme becomes more clear. And then now I have the motivation. I'm like, oh, I can see it more clearly. So now that I can see it, there's going to be this gap where I'm going to have to push through. I'm going to have to see it through to see if there's anything in this that can help people to the point where they're going to continue to pay attention. Now, that doesn't mean that, let's say we go a year in, 2 years in. Well, if the marketplace is telling me that what I have to say and what you have to say isn't that valuable, well, we might have to pivot, and that's okay. But my point is that most people who are saying, well, if you're not enjoying it, you should find something else to do, usually what they're talking about is that chasm between where they are and the hockey stick. And they're going to quit before the hockey stick takes place. That's why I use the money example, because most people stop investing because they're looking at what they can see. Like, think about faith. Faith is believing in the thing that you can't yet see. Okay, so as it relates to your money, most people quit before the hockey stick, and yet anybody who's smart about money knows that when it comes to investing, every chart looks the same for successful investing. It's like slow, I'm going to go this way, it's like slow, slow, slow up and to the right, and then it hockey sticks. And it's because there's a power law that exists in nature. There's a power law that exists in everything. You can talk about marriage, you can talk about parenting, you can talk about business, you can talk about money, you can talk about faith. And they all kind of have that, I'm going to just kind of go slightly up and to the right if it's going well. And then at some point, the power behind what you're doing compounds to the degree where, like Albert Einstein said, the eighth wonder of the world, all of a sudden it just takes off. And so for me, I think the friction is, how do I know? How do I know if I'm really not passionate, or I'm really not clear, or this is just the wrong thing to do? And so that's where I say those kinds of things are individual. Those kinds of things, I can't sit here and necessarily tell someone. All I can encourage someone to say is, make sure that if you're getting ready to pivot or quit, it isn't because you're just in the chasm, right?
Yeah, no, that's good. I think maybe it'd be helpful if you shared an experience. Maybe it was even just like a deal or something that you were looking at where you were in that chasm, and like you had the discipline to keep pushing through that.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, again, and this is where like it becomes habitual. So I'm going to take you all the way back to when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I was the kind of kid who, if I wanted to do something, I would figure out a way to, like, because I had to pay for it most of the time. So I can remember being a kid and I'd want to go roller skating on Friday nights. And my dad would be like, well, you got to find a way to make the money. And so I would go out and I would walk up and down the three streets around our street. And I would just knock on doors. Be like, hey, you know, your lawn looks a little long. You know, I can mow it for you. It's 10 bucks or 15 bucks. I don't even remember, but it was 10 or 15 bucks. And, you know, every 10th door or whatever, somebody would say yes. Or I'd say, hey, can I wash your car? And I always would get enough money to go do the things I wanted to do. Now, did I want to do that? No. But could I see that the outcome I was trying to achieve? And was that a motivation, pull motivation enough for me to push through the parts I didn't want to do? Yes. And so that taught me at a very young age that if I want something, there's a cost to it. See, most people today, they want something without having to pay the price. And I learned at a very young age, okay, I want something, there's a price. The price is painful, but the outcome is worth it. So then that led me to when I decided I wanted to play baseball. And I was just applying the same principles. It's like, oh, well, I want to be a professional baseball player, but I got to get way better. And so when all my friends, as I got older, or many of my friends were out like doing partying on the weekends, or, you know, playing video games or doing this or doing that, I was up at 6 a.m. at the gym with a couple of my buddies who were also committed, and we were hitting baseballs. And then we'd get done with school when we weren't in season, and we would go to the park and we'd take the jugs balls, and it would be pissing rain, and we'd be hitting and throwing and practicing. And other people are looking at us like, you guys are nuts. But for us, that wasn't hard, because the vision that we had at the end of that tunnel was so clear, right? And so we pushed, right? Because the vision was the pull. And then I got to see the fruit of that. Right? It didn't happen right away. I probably started with that dedication like maybe towards the end of my sophomore year. And then my junior year, all of a sudden the snowball started rolling. Then my senior year, then getting into college. And then I just go, oh, well, this principle works. So then I start to apply it to when I go into business. And so for me, I think that I think every major experience in my life, from being a kid trying to make a buck to do the things I want, to my baseball career, to my business career, to my investing career, every single one of them have. Like, think about, I was telling you this a couple weeks ago. I got into business. I have friends that got into business at the same time. Some of these friends made way more money than I do. But my net worth has grown to surpass theirs, because while they were taking that money and doing things like going on nice vacations and getting bottle service and doing all that, which is fine. I'm not judging that. I was like, well, I'm going to try and put as much of this money to work as I can. And so I was paying off my business. I was investing in properties, and man, that's like, that is the chasm. But here I am 43 years old today. And I have the ability, God, thank God, financially to do things that many of them aren't able to do, because I just saw it through. And that is where the investor's approach comes from. See, the consumer is just focused on, how do I get ripped tomorrow? How do I get ripped next week? The investor is focused on, how do I sow into, how do I water a seed? How do I watch the seed turn into a plant? till it grows into something that bears fruit. Listen, man, you plant a seed in the ground, it doesn't bear fruit next year or the year after that. Usually it's year three, year four, year five. And then it doesn't hit max growth until, I don't know, I'm not a botanist, but like maybe it's year 7, 8, 9, 10 or what, and you have to groom it and you have to trim it. There's all these things. And it's like, but we in our society, in our world today, we want to just plant the seed and reap the harvest right away. And if we don't, then we cut the tree and we plant the next seed and we cut the tree and we plant the next seed and we spend our whole lives bouncing from one seed to the next seed to the next seed, never experiencing the benefit and the joy and the nourishment of the fruit.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. I think maybe you can speak to this point as well. It makes me think of, I believe it's Psalm 23, and I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's walk through the shadow or the valley of the shadow of death. I fear no evil. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And I think that, like, for maybe those listening and for maybe you at that point in time in your life where you're pushing through those chasms, you're like, that's another level of pull motivation. Like a lot of people may sit there and look at their lives and go, you know, what is pushing me to do this actual thing? So like, let's go back to the working out example. Like for me, if I were to just be working out to be buffer than the next guy standing next to me, then I'm probably not going to make it longer than a week. I'm probably going to end up on the couch at the end of the week. Or if I, you know, if I'm just working out to, you know, do whatever, but if I'm working out to, you know, be healthy for my kids when I'm 50 years old and play catch with my grandkids in the front yard when I'm 80. It's like, if that's one of the reasons, that's the pull motivation. But I think one thing maybe you can talk to as well is because you got to have a lot of examples of, like you said, developing that sort of walking through that chasm. You know, where has the spirit been in that? Like where have you seen the spirit, like, you know, getting your back on it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that, again, this is where friction comes into play, because I think many people think that our desires are all evil, and I believe that God gave us desire, the ability to desire, and I believe that he uses our, if we allow him to do it his way, he wants to use our desire so that we can bear fruit, and so that the fruit we bear benefits ourselves and other people. See, I think so often we get into this mode where it's like everything has to be always 100% self-sacrificial. But when you think about like capitalism or free markets as an example, part of the free market, the reason it works is because people are inherently doing things, right, that they see as good for themselves, but also beneficial for someone else, right? Like they're going to go trade something that they did because they want to pay their bills, but they also know that somebody else wants it bad enough to make the trade. So it's benefiting them and it's benefiting me. And so what I'm saying in this is, like, when it comes to the spirit and the desire, because I think what you're asking is, what's the motivation behind the things that you're pursuing, right? Well, when I was a kid, like, the motivation was I just wanted to go roller skating. There was no, like, ancillary serving other people. Now, what I learned at that age, though, was I could go roller skating whenever I wanted if I was good at serving other people, right? If I was good at washing their cars and mowing their lawns, right? Then I would get the things that I desired to go do the things that I wanted. Now, as it relates to where I am today, it's literally the same thing. But now it's matured to the point where I spend more of my time saying, oh, well, the secret is, and we've talked about this in past conversations, but it's like the secret to moving to the right financially, the secret to moving to the right in your business is actually get better at serving people. Find better ways to put other people first, and then you will get the things that you desire, right? But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't desire things. So when it comes to working out, the whole reason I said all that is because actually I believe working out is both. I don't think there's anything wrong with, hey, I want to work out so that, like, I'm in great shape. And I think it's actually okay to say, and I want to look good. Now, again, the friction, that can easily turn into self-idolization, which is bad, right? But I don't think there's anything wrong personally with, I want to look good. I want to be as fit as I can be. I want to steward this temple in a way that God would be proud of, right? But I also want to do it at the same time so that I can play, you know, catch with my kids and roll around someday with my grandkids and all. It's both, right? It's got to be both. Maybe it doesn't have to be, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it being both. And so I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how I think about it. It's not either or. It's often both and. And then the frictional part of it for us and where the Spirit comes in is Lord, show me if these things are becoming about me primarily, right? Versus me enjoying the ancillary benefit of it being about other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I were to do like a self-analysis of, you know, where my discipline or my motivation was less than I would hope. It was, you know, oftentimes we talk about it all the time too. Oftentimes where my discipline was lacking was in moments where the reason that I was doing it was out of scarcity. And I feel like that's part of the biggest bone I have to pick with, you know, guru culture today and a lot of the motivational speakers or whatever that you hear nowadays is, and maybe like I think what we're talking about is kind of like you said, both and is they just say push, and a lot of the time the push is rooted in the scarcity mindset. It's like I'm pushing because I'm running away from something, or I'm trying to, you know, escape a feeling that I don't want to have anymore. And maybe to kind of wrap up is like what you're saying is there is a place for that push in the initial, but there's got to be the pull that is not rooted in something like that.
Yeah, I think the push is powered by the pull. Right? Think about Paul. He says, I run the race with endurance. He gives this impression that this is hard. And then he says, but I do it with joy. He's pushing, but his push is actually powered by the pull. You see what I'm saying? And so I think that is the equation. That's why I say it's got to be see it. I got to have a vision for what I'm going to push for, and the vision is what gives me is the pull that powers the push. And that's the thing. When I lose the vision or the vision is fuzzy, then there's not power behind the push. There is no pull to power the push, or the pull to power the push isn't strong enough. And I think we've talked about this. I think most of the time the problem is people don't actually know what they want. They don't. So if you don't know what you want, it's really hard to have the pull that powers the push. If you're crystal clear on what you want, then that vision and that desire is actually powerful enough to power the push that's going to be required to get there. Does that make sense?
No, 100%. It completely does. I mean, I feel like there's just ideas bouncing around in my brain now of like connecting and all. It's like when you said that, I think of like pushing for the sake of pushing. And, you know, that's, we've had some conversations in the past about like relationships, but I think about that in like my marriage too, is like, oftentimes we hear the analogy of like in a relationship, in a marriage, like the man is usually the head and the woman is the neck. It's like the woman's, part of the woman's role is to direct and to kind of, to support that and creating that sort of a, direction of where are you pushing?
Yeah, like where are you taking me? Where are you leading me? Right? And that's where I think when you said earlier that a lot of the guru culture or the push culture or the motivation behind why you have to push and push only is rooted in scarcity, and I would say yes, and maybe more relatable is it's rooted in fear. It's the in many cases when people talk about discipline, what's actually the underpinning of the grind it out is fear. And fear of what? Fear of scarcity, right? And so when you think about, like, there's a lot of people who they just talk about grinding all the time. Why? Because they think the only way to have enough is to grind your way to enough. And that's the exact opposite of the biblical narrative. The biblical narrative says, be still and know that I am God. It doesn't say grind, right? And try and make it on your own. And so I think, like Jamie Winship says all the time, he says there's only two human behavior motivators. Your behavior as a human can only be motivated by two things. I don't know if he's right, but it makes sense to me. One is fear and one is love. Fear is often rooted in scarcity. Got to get mine. Got to protect mine. Got to separate because I got to get ahead. The other is love. There's always enough. I'm not going to trample somebody else to get more because I trust that God will provide, right? And so I think that, so going back to like, okay, as let's say in your marriage, let's say leading your household, or let's say in your business, or let's say on your sports team, right? The best leaders are the ones that are going, hey guys, this is the vision I have for where we can go. How's that vision sound to you? See, the problem is a lot of men want to lead their wife by telling them where they're going. But God doesn't do that to us. God invites us along into a journey. And then we get to decide, is that journey sound like a place we want to go? And he's a great salesman, and I don't mean it in a sleazy way, but like he's great at painting the picture of where he wants to take us in such a way that we'd be crazy not to want to go. So if we're not doing the same thing as a husband, right? Probably not going to have a great marriage. Probably not going to have a great family experience. Because I think that it's, hey fam, this is the vision I have for where I think we can go. How's that sound? All right. Well, there's going to be a chasm to get there. And it's my job as we're going through the chasm to keep my eyes so fixed on the vision that I can help y'all understand that this is just part of the journey. This is just part of the journey. And it doesn't have to last 40 years like wandering around in the desert. It can last 11 days like it's supposed to, right? And so I think to me, it's the vision is so often and conveying the vision and painting a picture of the vision and making the vision appealing is often the power behind the push. Because then everybody's like, oh yeah, I got it. Like on a sports team. I can remember in college doing two-a-days, and we would do 6 a.m.s in the morning, and the whole point was to make us all want to die. Literally, like, it was horrible. People are puking in trash cans, and the purpose of that, the purpose of the pain, listen, man, if you can't push through that, you'll never win a championship. You won't even make it to the next game because you'll quit. But at the end of those crazy things, coach would sit us down and say, guys, the reason that I'm trying to kill you here is because you got to be mentally tough enough and physically fit enough to do the part of the grind that we're going to have to get through to win a championship. And then he'd look at us and say, I think that this team right here has the potential to be the best team that ever in the history of this conference existed. And you know what that year we did? And I get chills talking about it. We went like 53-7. We won more games than any team in the history of that conference, and we won the title. In the, like, the bottom, I think it was the bottom of the ninth or the bottom. I was like at the last minute. And it's like we got to see all the grinding, all the pain, all the puking, all the, man, I hate my coach. He's such an ass. All of that. We had to push through because he kept telling us, he kept reminding us, boys, this is where we're going. And then we got to experience it in real life. That'll change your life.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of leader that I've always strived and am always working towards to be, is given that example of your coach. I think the one key thing that stuck out to me in that story that you just said is the vision for him was so clear that it was like it was impossible not to get behind. Exactly. And he was even like, it was so clear to him, even to the point where he was like, every single one of you is going to make it there.
Yeah.
And it was just completely out of abundance. There was no scarcity. It was all, and it made you guys push. It was like, okay, there's this person that has such conviction in not only us, but the ability of everybody together, right, that it's impossible not to get behind.
Yeah. One other lesson he taught us, which was a very valuable lesson. We played a doubleheader. We were playing the worst team in the conference. We beat him in the first game 8-0. And he was so pissed. He's like, guys, you took your foot off the gas. You live life. You play this game taking your foot off the gas. You won't make it. So in between games, we didn't get to eat lunch. We literally went and we ran sprints between foul poles. And we were so pissed. We were like, this is such bull crap. We just beat these guys 8-0. Next game, I think it was 23-0. Yeah, he's like, that's what it's going to take to win a championship. So my point in all that is those kinds of lessons instill in somebody. That's why, like, as I decorated my office, you can't really see it in here, but it's like there's a baseball poster and there's a baseball jersey behind me, and I don't even watch baseball. I have maybe watched like 3 baseball games since I graduated, which was like 20 years ago now. Baseball is not a huge part. It doesn't take up any mental space in my brain anymore. But these kinds of lessons that I learned from playing sports, from being on a team, from suffering through difficulty and hardship, from all the things that we just spent the last 10 minutes or so talking about, had a huge part in who I've become. And so in that example, it's like nobody was excited about the fact that he was going to make us push, even when it looked like we had just like done exactly what we were supposed to do. But see, he could see clearly something we didn't understand yet. And he could paint a vision, even though we were mad. He still tied it to, the guys, this is where we're going. This is what it's going to take to get there. And that fueled, again, the push into that next game where we just absolutely crushed these guys. And then that fuels things in your life where you just go, oh, I understand. Like when things get hard, most people are going to quit. So it isn't actually that hard for me to be successful. Yeah, because like I know, and this is what I say, I know about human nature. I know human nature. I understand human nature. That's why I'm so vehemently opposed to things like collectivism. Because people who believe in collectivism, they just fail to understand human nature. So then I go, oh, okay, when we go back to the right side, getting to the right side of the bell curve, 80% of it is just understanding that people are going to do what people are going to do. And if I can develop myself, right, if I can let the Lord guide me and lead me to become what people can become, which is not riddled in fear, which is not quitting when it gets hard, which is not all those things, then getting to the right side of the bell curve is actually not that difficult. But you know what it does require? People will call it discipline. And that's probably true. It's also self-control. But I think it's driven by, like I said, instead of fear, love.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good.
So hopefully, if people are still watching, you're still here, you enjoyed that. I know we did. And it was great to be in person. I think it certainly adds a different component. Jake, it's almost April as we record this, and Jake is going to be moving to Florida here sometime probably in July. So our plan is to be doing these in person from there on out. In the meantime, we'll keep making them remote. But if you're still here, we appreciate you being here. We appreciate you watching or listening, depending on how you're consuming this. And listen, if that helped you or you think that there's somebody in your life that could benefit from hearing this conversation, we'd love it if you'd share it with them. And we'd love to hear your experience in the comments, right? Again, we're not sitting here saying we're the guru or we have all the answers. I'm just sharing perspective, things that I've learned along the way, things that are speaking to me, things that that are challenging me. And I'd love to hear if you have, you know, maybe something that jumped out to you that you think might help us in future conversations or add to this conversation. And again, like the video if you liked it, share it with a friend, and we'd love if you'd subscribe to the channel, or if you're consuming this on podcast, subscribe there, and we'll see you next time.